The Secret Origins Podcast, Episode 6.
Welcome to episode 6 of the Secret Origins Podcast. I am your host, TFG1 Mike, and joining me is Zombie Lupus Convoy.
Zombie and Lucid don't exactly go together.
Yeah, Zombie Lucid Lupus Convoy? Yeah, that doesn't, no.
Brains and visions!
Yeah. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm zombified, apparently. yeah, raring to go.
So what
are you doing, good sir?
Doing all right. You know, just doing the podcasting thing and all that happy stuff. What have you been up to?
Prepping for the next semester of school.
Wait, isn't it almost summer break time?
Yeah. I have to submit for summer and fall if I want to get into the classes that I want now.
Oh, okay.
My degree program is insanely competitive.
Yeah, I bet.
I believe there's about 200 students that apply for 30 seats in the program every year.
Oh, good lord. That means 170 people are going to be SOL.
And people get priority based on how long they've been waiting to get into the program and their grades and other intrinsic factors. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I'm choosing some very safe courses that I need, and ones that will help me towards my master's degree later on. And it's a sit and wait program right now.
I'm too old for school.
That's what I thought.
I'm just too old for school. Like, I don't mind learning new things like through life, but just having to get up and go to it, I'm too old for that crap.
That's why we have online courses.
I know, but I'm still too old. I'm too lazy for that crap. I'll tell you that right now. did you get anything interesting in the mail this week?
Why, yes, I did. I ended up with the complete metal-cased series of Justice League.
Yeah, huh?
And it was shiny and nice, and thank you so much. My other half actually picked it up and went, "This is a nice case," and then started hefting it and touching it and then embracing it and going, "This is a really nice case.
See?
I don't think you're keeping this."
now. you had mentioned to me off air last time we recorded, when we recorded episode 5, that you weren't sure how you were going to watch season 2 once we start that, and I'm like, oh god,
seriously, Warner Brothers, what's up with you?
Well, I'm like, oh god, I know he's not gonna go out and buy it himself. And you had mentioned before that your other half said that you guys are pretty much an all Blu-ray family, and I don't think this is ever coming out on let the complete series. I don't think it's coming out on Blu-ray anytime soon.
It's
so I said, screw it. I went to Amazon and I freaking bought another one.
It's a complete tease for a company to sit there and go, okay, we're going to produce season 1 and go,
yep,
and release it, and then like you see a pre-order page for it on Amazon for season 2 and you're all excited and you're waiting and waiting and waiting, and then you realize a year has gone by and you're like, wow, this kind of sucks. So where is it?
You know,
it's waiting for Gargoyles season 2 or season 3.
You know, it's probably the thing where maybe the... See, they... What pisses me off about the Warner Brothers DCAU DVDs is that they will only add one or two extra things, like that season one Blu-ray. There is only one additional feature on there, other than the fact that it's on a Blu-ray disc, as far as special features. Maybe the sales for that didn't do very well. That's maybe why they haven't put the rest of them out on Blu-ray yet.
Still, it's... God damn it, if you're going to start something like that, and you commit to starting that, finish it off. Come on.
The tin case makes up for it.
It does. But still.
I really wanted to save the DVD case stuff review for when we end this show, but I must point out on season one that there are a lot of inconsistencies with season one and season two of Justice League as far as the DVDs go. I've got the booklet here, and it does have a nice little foreword from Bruce Timm. I'm not going to read this, but those of you who bought this will have read it inside the booklet. On disc, I think it's 3 or disc 4. Excuse me.
I'm dying over here.
Medic! Oh, wait. Crap.
Yeah, exactly. You are the medic.
I can't reach. Damn you, AT&T.
The two-part episode, A Night of Shadows. In the booklet, they call it A Night with Shadows. So there's a misconception there, and this is on season one. Here's a little programming note for season two. Once we get to... where is it? Sorry about this, folks. I'm looking through this book as we do this. Once we get to the reviews of Hereafter and Secret Society... In the booklet, they list on Disc 7, Hereafter Parts 1 and Part 2 is the final two episodes of Disc 7. And then on Disc 8, they list in the booklet, Secret Society, Parts 1 and Part 2 is the first two episodes of Disc 8. That is actually wrong. Secret Society, Part 1 and Part 2 are on Disc 7, as the last episodes, and Hereafter is on Disc 8. So the booklet is wrong. They were wrong when they were season releases as well. I don't know why they did that. It's got to just be a misprint. However, we will be when we get to those episodes, we will review them, Secret Society and then Hereafter, because that's the air date order that they were, production, air date, whatever order that they were supposed to be in. Oh, boy. What else would you like to talk about in this little intro?
This is such a shiny set.
It is. And did you notice the detailing on the actual logo on the front? If you take the actual DVD cases out...
It's embossed out.
It's embossed, because you can see the... Yeah. I like the purple and Hot Girls logo. That's awesome on the back of it. I love that. You know, it almost looks like a book. Really? Because if you think about it, when you put the two DVD cases inside of it, and then you put it on your shelf, like, just, like, facing the way it's supposed to face, it looks like a giant freaking book. It's so awesome.
I seriously dig it. I pulled it back out, and I'm just like, ooh, shiny. the cover of it, it's, you're holding it up and looking at the metal case. We've got the Trinity on the front, and then
obviously
the rest of the initial seven in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when I posted pics, when I first heard about this set, I posted pics over at Earth2.net, their forums, and people are asking me, well, why the hell is Red Tornado, Dr. Fate, Aquaman, Green Arrow, the Atom, why are they on the second volume's disc?
Well, Green Arrow does play a big part in the other.
Well, yeah,
at least in the initial story arc.
Yeah. Once we go Unlimited, he will. And my only explanation for the other character, because the only two characters from the original seven that are on the second volume are GL and John Jones. The Atom plays a essential role later on. Red Tornado gets a cameo, I guess you could say.
Here, pig.
Okay, well, so, yeah, that, but he also, I forget which episode it is, it's one of the Lex Luthor episodes later on, where, the return, in Unlimited, where Amazo returns, and he just splits Red Tornado in half.
Oh,
it's a good thing he's a
sucky
robot.
Thing about being an android or a robot in one of these series.
Yeah.
There's nothing against RoboGore.
No. And like I said, Dr. Fate was pretty much, you know, he had a few essential stories. Aquaman essentially could have been an eighth member. I believe Bruce Timm and Company had said that Green Arrow could have been an eighth member. They, you know, if they wanted to go eight people, they actually, Bruce Timm has said on the DVD features that he had loved Hot Girl so much that it was a tie between, it was a toss-up between Hot Girl and Green Arrow. Green Arrow could essentially have been the seventh member. But they wanted to, to give it diversity with, are you protesting over there? You don't like Green Arrow?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I mean, in the current, I finished off Blackest Night. But, yeah, going back and reading some old comics and stuff, it's like Green Arrow is a really badass character. I really like Ollie.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I don't see how well that would have worked. That's also because I love Hot Girl.
Yeah, it works where they brought him in though. It so totally works where they brought him in. But I don't see it could work. I don't see it working in this first or even the second season. I wanted to point out something that, we're going to go to some special feature audio that you will hear, and we will come back with our actual thoughts on Season 1 of Justice League.
Hey everybody, welcome to Inside the Justice League. I'm Jason Hillhouse. With me this evening is Bruce Timm, Dan Reba, James Tucker, and Rich Fogel. We're going to get the inside scoop on what went into Justice League Season 1. Your questions, my questions, their questions. Discussions are going to happen starting now.
Working together, we saved the planet. And I believe that if we stayed together as a team, we would be a force that could truly work for the ideals of peace and justice.
How did you guys decide that, okay, after Batman Beyond, and you know, Batman, Superman, Batman Beyond, and Justice League seemed to be kind of the next evolutionary step.
Job security.
Probably going all the way back to Batman, and then certainly after we'd done the Superman show, we got that question a lot from the fans, was, you know, when are you going to do Justice League next? There was a lot of interest in doing the Justice League. Since time immemorial, people just love to have their heroes team up for some reason. I don't know why, but they do. And I'm on record as being kind of hesitant about doing it, just because I knew how difficult the show it would be to do, and I was right.
Something that we couldn't have done any earlier because the technology wouldn't have been there for it.
It was a learning curve for us to figure out how to do bigger and better set pieces.
It was different in terms of the way we approached the stories. It was different in the way that we approached the characters. And
all the things we had learned along the way, suddenly we had to up them 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and staging action for Batman or one or two characters, and suddenly you have seven, you know, at least five at any given time.
How are you going to come up with a story every week that is going to challenge that group?
Right.
Sure.
And it was tough.
And you've got a finite number of really mega villains in the DC Comics roster who can literally, realistically take on the Justice League.
One of the things that's hard about the Justice League as a group was that these are not characters, by and large, that were created to go together. And to find a way to mix that together so that they were a cohesive unit that worked together and that they didn't overlap each other too much in terms of powers. It was a real challenge.
My home Thanagar is a warlike world. There, one must strike first.
That seventh spot could have been Hawkman or the Atom or Aquaman or whoever else you want to name.
Sure.
And of all those candidates, we thought Hawkgirl was the most interesting, and I think, you know, that turned out to be the case.
Again, throw another girl in the group and that shakes it up a little bit, yeah. Because,
right.
I mean, everybody can't be crushing on Wonder Woman.
That's right.
In brightest day, in blackest night,
No evil shall escape my sight.
The Green Lantern wasn't a hard decision to make, though, because of the fact that in the mythology, there are a whole bunch of Green Lanterns. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't feel like we needed to make a huge explanation of it.
I think in the case of Justice League, we ignored a lot of that continuity.
For the first season, we'd made a deliberate decision to not have any of their supporting characters because we didn't have the time to play with them, and we wanted to really establish that the Justice League was its own show.
In order for the chemistry in our group to work, we really needed to initially jettison all of the supporting characters from the other things so that it forced the heroes to interact with each other.
Why do we have to ride in this rust bucket? What's wrong with your ring?
Lady, the galaxy's a big place. I need my navicomputer to find Warworld.
He's got a point.
Great. Take his side.
I'm not taking his side. I'm just saying...
I'm wrong again.
You guys, for this show, I know, sat on actually did kind of plot out and created more or less a Bible, right? Like, in terms of, like, you knew kind of the Hawkgirl situation going
yes.
in.
We planned the Hawkgirl thing from day one, yeah.
Right.
In the Bible, because we knew we were going to be using the Bible for publicity purposes, we actually wrote a fake backstory for her.
Right.
It was a disinformation campaign on Hawkgirl.
I mean, we didn't have the whole betrayal story completely figured out yet, but we did know from early on that she was going to fall in love with Green Lantern, that they were going to have a romance, and that she was going to betray the League.
Everybody expected us to team Superman and Wonder Woman because that's the sort of more obvious
way to go.
But why
would we do that? Because Superman's going to be with Lois. I don't understand.
No, it's not a good choice.
Fans are so bizarre.
It's not a good choice.
That's what people think. Like the two strongest people get together. It's like the high school, the quarterback and the cheerleaders. Like that's what's going to.
So it's sort of like working against the grain that sort of helped make that spark.
Yeah.
And that idea actually came from Paul Levitz.
Paul Levitz at DC Comics. Yeah, he's the publisher of DC Comics.
How much of that is dictating, like, here's the parameters, this is the version of Aquaman we need to do.
They're pretty good about letting us do what we want to do. They're pretty open to different interpretations of their characters. They did not insist that we use the hook-handed, long-haired Aquaman. That was something we, our own initiative, went to.
Yeah, I think I just doodled a sketch. I mean, our version is slightly different than what they were doing, because at the time, they were doing, basically, Aquaman was King Arthur.
Right.
And we were thinking, he's a barbarian.
What's taking so long? I must return to Atlantis.
Sit tight, Your Highness. We'll tell you when it's safe to go.
You presume too much.
Whatever, there's a chance to throw in a comic book reference, it's, and get away with it and not looking too geeky. It's
and hopefully you do it in such a way that if you don't get the joke, it doesn't take you out of the show.
A good idea is a good idea no matter where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And, we would be making more work for ourselves if we went out of our way to ignore the things in the comic books.
Allow us to introduce ourselves. Justice Guild, roll call.
Catman.
Black Siren.
Green Guardsman.
Tom Turbine.
The Streak.
Let's get this painful part out of the way. Everybody, the most painful part of this out of the way. Favorite episode, season one.
It's easy for me.
See,
what's your favorite?
Look at Tucker. One.
Legends, part one.
This can't be real.
Tell me about it. I almost busted a gut during that roll call routine.
It's not that. It's the Justice Guild. They're comic book characters.
The animation on that is particularly good, and I designed half the models for that show.
Almost all of the characters.
Yeah.
And it was a really audaciously comic booky show.
Can't you work any faster?
Maybe Enemy Below. I had an idea that the whole court intrigue story would be almost Shakespearean in the way that it played out, and the motives of the villains and things like that.
Let's see your identity papers now!
Sorry, but my identity's a secret. Chicks dig that whole man of mystery thing.
Well, they picked my two favorite ones, but really, Savage Time in part two, I think, because I never really thought we'd be able to do a World War II story. It was kind of a forbidden subject. You just didn't deal with it, and we found a way to deal with it and do it in a fantasy way and get the Blackhawks in there.
Draga meets his greatest foe, the man from Krypton.
Were there any that people just didn't respond to?
Everybody hated Warworld.
Problem with Warworld all comes down to the end of it.
Absolutely.
At one time, we had Superman kicking everybody's butt. You came in and said, we've seen Superman kick people's butt before. Let's do something different.
Well, they shouldn't have had Draga in the story if we really... Well, here's the other thing. I mean, that brings up a good point, too. Season one, we got called on the carpet for making Superman a wimp.
Yeah.
And guilty.
Guilty as charged.
Sure, yeah.
We didn't know we were doing it. We were actually kind of using it as a kind of a dramatic crutch early on. It's like, oh, well, hey, if Superman can get taken down really, you know, right away, well, then now this is a really bad threat, and now the rest of everybody else is all in trouble. We didn't realize it had become, like, a recurring gag until we started getting the internet comments, and everybody's saying, well, wait a minute, why is Superman such a wimp now? And it's like, oh, you know what? There's a pattern.
This watchtower will act as an early warning system for detecting other threats of invasion from space.
And it also has a fully stocked kitchen. Ice mocha?
I always think of season one as kind of our shakedown cruise. We were working really hard, and it was a hard show to do. But on the other hand, I think just the enormity of the project was kind of daunting, and we kind of let it cow us a little bit. We kind of let it intimidate us to the point where we made mistakes based on fear.
Well, and also, this was the first show where I think we let the style of the show take a back seat.
That was a conscious decision, which I think was
right.
a mistake.
And it was, yeah, and we eventually corrected that. And we thought this was a way of making it more real world.
Because of the more superheroic things that were happening in the show, we felt that we should ground the show in a little bit more of a believable reality.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. As always, it's been a real treat for me. Thank you for watching at home. That's it. This time for Inside the Justice League.
So because we are doing this show in seasons, I thought it was good for us to have recaps of each of the seasons instead of just one giant recap at the end, because honestly, my memory isn't that good. So, yeah, we were thinking a refresher course at the end of each season. A couple of notes that I've made. I actually noted the only two episodes or the only two stories that feature Lex Luthor in Justice for All and Legends. And he's barely in Legends. I mean, he's like right there at the beginning before they do the whole time traveling thing. And, yeah.
But the one episode that he was in, he was good.
Yeah, Injustice for All. And actually, it's funny, Injustice for All is the only episode in the first season that features the Joker.
That's true.
Which, you know, I know at the time there was a whole bat embargo going on, but it's funny, like, how many different villains they got within the first season without going the whole super villain rogue thing.
Right.
Really? What's her name? Arisia? That's a villain? Give me a break. The whole thing in Paradise Lost with Hades. Okay, that's a viable Wonder Woman villain. Arisia is
not. I would
not.
Say so.
Huh?
I would say.
Yeah. That's a. You know, when I think of like supervillains and stuff, it always comes down to, unfortunately, for me, because I'm not the comic book geek I would like to be, it comes down to Batman and Superman, because they are pretty much the two that have the the ginormous rogues gallery for the most part. Well, Superman's kind of iffy. He has a few major supervillains, but, I mean, Batman's the one that has the biggest rogues gallery out of everybody, I'd say.
I'd say the second biggest, not out of impact, but I don't
know. Well, I mean, as far as like this cartoon series goes.
Oh yeah. Batman, if someone were to say supervillain, like I would automatically think Batman, because his is so, it's so huge, and yet the characters are so dynamic and so different from one another.
Right.
I mean, you can't really say that Catwoman, the Penguin, and the Joker are all exactly the same.
No, you can't.
I mean, their personality types, their archetypes are completely different. The only other thing that we have not hit it yet, but we will hit it later on in the series, is the Flash.
Well, we kind of hit it a little bit, especially when... what was that damn episode? Not Injustice for All. Oh, damn. I can't even remember. There was a Gorilla Grodd episode in this season.
Yep.
But yeah, what was that one? I forget.
Oh
God, crap! I'm gonna have to look it up. But yeah,
Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, Brave and the Bold. Yeah, exactly. You know that, and the funny thing about that is they made that tie back to, like, later on, when Gorilla Grodd comes back, they made it tie back to that episode of Brave and the Bold.
Continuity. It's great.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. We will hit a lot of Flash's villains. You know, and honestly, in later seasons, I would say probably the one character out of the original seven that really does a whole lot of maturing is Flash. Not that Batman or Superman or Wonder Woman or any of them really need to mature, but...
he's the one that comes most notably the farthest, I think.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we also see why he's such a goofball.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Why, you know, people don't take him seriously, but why he's the way he is from a dealing with supervillains point of view.
Oh, yeah.
Did you forget to take your meds?
Yeah, but see, I didn't find that funny. I found him very compassionate and caring because, you know, people don't get... Now, I don't know the whole Flash deal. I haven't paid any attention to it. It's not that I... Like I said before, it's not that I don't want to. My money's too invested other places. But, you know, I know the difference between Barry Allen and Wally West, and this is the Wally West Flash, and it showed him being in Central City and him understanding, for the most part, these villains. What was it, the Trickster, the Jester, whatever he was?
Yeah, the Trickster.
Yeah. You know, Flash actually cared about him, and he knew that, you know, there was something wrong with him. You know, it's not just Captain Cold or Boomerang Boy or whatever his name. Captain Boomerang. Yeah, that's what it was. Mirror Master. You know, those are his supervillains. But Trickster,
The Rogues.
Yep.
That they're known as.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite episodes from season one?
Definitely Injustice for All. That was just the Bat putting the moves on the Cat, completely manipulating everybody in one way or another, and just he's basically just sitting back and he could get out anytime he wanted. We get to see what Batman really is like and why he is the goddamn Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I am a Green Lantern geek, I have to say in Blackest Night, only just because we get to see somebody else besides John with the ring. But it was a pretty bad episode. What else? Night of Shadows, that was pretty decent.
Yeah.
And Legends, of course.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's the whole the fact that I'm a big King Arthur fan that I really enjoyed Night of Shadows. And plus,
it was excellent.
And plus, Etrigan. I
gone, the form of man.
Yeah, I love that. That's actually, so
to be honest, I was saying that for like a week afterwards at work, and
I was saying it. Strange. As soon as I got the audio, I had kept saying it. Gone, the form of man. Rise, the demon, Etrigan. I've been saying it all the damn time.
It's pretty bad when like you're doing your thing at work and you're saying it out loud and you're just kind of chuckling to yourself and everybody else in the facility is giving you like a wide berth and looking at you very strangely. Especially when they all come from a very religious households.
Oh boy.
And you're saying shit like that. So I'm trying to say in Spanish, it's from a TV show. Something I'm doing for a radio show. It's okay.
I really enjoyed the Savage Time, the final three-parter.
Honestly, that was a lot. I enjoyed that a lot more than I thought I would.
I commend them for doing a World War II story. It's very hard to do.
Who else has done that? Like, in a kids' TV show?
In cartoons? I don't... I
don't know of anybody.
I guess you could kind of count G1, Starscream's Brigade. I mean, it wasn't really a World War II story, but like the whole prequel of how those tanks ended up on the island. But yeah, honestly, I can't think of any other cartoon now or 20 years ago
that
would even touch that. And they paid it such homage. I mean, they threw the Blackhawks in there. You've got Easy Company. Yep. You know, you've got all these homages, and it's just great. And the story itself, I don't think I found that many things wrong with it, other than like little nitpicks, like the fact when they're shooting at GL in the cargo hold, and he doesn't have his ring to protect himself, and bullets are just flying everywhere. I'm telling you, a ricochet could have happened on that. He could have got hit in the leg. Or somewhere, or whatever, but, you know...
the way the episode went, someone got shot in the leg, and running around perfectly fine a couple hours later.
Yeah, it's all funny until somebody gets shot in the leg. Oh my god, you shot him! It just grazed off. That's an Armageddon reference, ladies and gentlemen. Oh boy. What else do we want to say about Season 1? How did you like the animation overall for Season 1?
It was fairly decent, but there was times that we had the animation errors that were pretty blatant. And I think as the story progressed, it got a lot better. Like, as the different episodes progressed, it was like they got a hold of it, and the QC of it increased.
Yeah.
I don't know, the animation seemed maybe a little bit choppy in the beginning, but then got a lot better as we went along.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I think that by the end of where we're going with this, it will definitely...
Oh, it gets a lot better. You know, also, it probably could be the fact that, and I believe Bruce Timm has said this in the past, I don't know, it could be the fact that they'll draw something and they'll send it to the overseas animators, and they may not understand how they want it to look from a drawing, you know, because of the whole language barrier or whatever. I mean, that could be it. It's not like where you have, say, three Starscreams in one shot, and it's supposed to be Thundercracker, Starscream, and Skywarp. You know, it's not a whole lot of, you know, same color issues. Honestly, after about 3 or 4 episodes, even though we refer to the 2 and 3 parters as stories, because that's technically what they are, as individual episodes, I got so sick of the title sequence. I got so sick of it. So wow. For Season 2, I'm probably going to just fast forward through the title sequence. And I actually prefer the unlimited theme more than the original theme.
I don't know. I like the... I don't really have any complaints about the theme music, or even the title sequence.
Well,
I definitely, like, fast-forwarded through the opening, but...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, after you see the opening scene, and then it goes to the title sequence, I watched it over and over and over again. And, of course, by the time the credits roll, I will always look at the voice actors. Well, I'll look at the voice actor and I'll pause it on the voice actor, the guest at voice actors, just to see who was who, and then I'll just skip to the next episode. But I would always watch that beginning title sequence, and I don't think I'm going to do that in Season 2, because it's, you know, like we said, it's the same thing over and over and over again. I'm trying to find, I've screen capped in the title sequence where they have Hot Girl flying out.
Yeah.
I've had about 6 or 7 shots of that. I'm trying to see, and I know this is horrible, I'm trying to see if they actually showed her nipple on that shot. Because it's a form-fitting shot. I mean, she's anatomically correct in that image. Yes, I'm a dirty old man, I know.
At least you... unless you say it with pride.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow.
Don't deny it, you just accept it. And
I suppose we should... God, I really don't want to talk about this, but I suppose we should pick our worst episode.
That which shall not be named.
Exactly. I barely even made it through that.
I did. I took one for the team. But, God, that was pretty painful to watch, actually.
Yeah, it was. The story was horrible.
And Mongo, come on, Mongo. Ugh, horrible character.
Yeah, Mongul. Oh, God. It's just one of those things where it's like, oh, wow. I guess there has to be one bad story for...
Yeah, but honestly, I kind of was holding this to a higher standard. There can't be that any bad episodes.
Oh, believe me, there's going to be plenty of episodes in season two that I don't like either. Not a lot, but some.
There's going to be some pretty bad ones, huh?
Yeah,
they can't be as bad as Warworld.
No, not as bad as Warworld, but it's one of those things where there are just some that make no sense. Hearts and Minds is one. The only thing that I like that episode for is Keith David's voice acting. I don't know, it's just one of those things where I'm not really sure how it's going to unfold. And you know, it's funny, I've tried to hold back on what, because I know as soon as I got this set, I was ready to rip it open and watch every single episode. And I said, no, I've got to hold off, I've got to watch them in groups. Because overall, I love the series.
It's a great series. It's one that you can just drop something in the DVD player and just play it in the background or just watch it.
And at the same time, there are certain episodes where you should never watch again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That which shall not be named.
Yes. So, do we have any other... this is kind of a short episode. Our recap episodes are most likely going to be short, because we're just kind of doing an overshot of each season. You have any other thoughts on season one?
I'm not really sure where Metamorphosis fits in all this. I think that's an episode that we really could have done without.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that. I went back and I finished watching it.
And what are your feelings now that you finished watching it?
It was a lame plot.
Well, Metamorpho is a pretty lame character. Sorry.
I like the design on him in the episode, and I like the fact that he has all those strange powers, especially coming up with red, sun energy or radiation or whatever. I think
if they were to do an episode like this, featuring someone with those type of powers, I really think that they could have done Firestorm instead, and that could have entertained me a lot more.
I so wish. Everything now, it seems like, I hate to admit this, because I can't stand this cartoon only because of the guy who's voicing Batman, but I caught an episode on Cartoon Network of Batman the Brave and the Bold. And they had Firestorm on that.
They had Metamorpho on there, too.
Did they? I don't know. I so wish they would have given us Firestorm in Justice League. That would have been awesome. Even if we had to wait until they expanded the league, that would have been so awesome to have Firestorm.
Well, we did... The movie that just recently came out that was supposed to be part of this...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He is in there, as is Aquaman.
Yes, he is. Justice League Crisis on Two Earths. We will actually talk about... We will not be reviewing Justice League Crisis on Two Earths in continuity, because it really isn't. But we will be talking about that when we hit our Season 2 recap, because it does have a lot of similarities. The continuity was removed. Dwayne McDuffie did rewrite his entire Justice League Worlds Collide script, but you can still see some continuity of what it was supposed to be, like with Batman's initiation process or his recruitment process in the movie.
That's a scary thought.
Well, All I'm saying is there is, I will point out, because by the time we get to our season 2 recap, I will have it on DVD, and I will write down every single continuity thing that could have tied season 2 and season 3 of Justice League Unlimited together.
It seems pretty big, actually.
They're there, trust me. They're there. You have to look for them, but it's there. I don't really like that. I know it's not something people normally notice, but what did you think of, like, the menus for the DVDs? For season one?
See, I watched all of season one on the Blu-ray, so...
Well, I'm specifically talking about the main menu. Isn't it the same on the Blu-ray as it is on the original season?
No, honestly, I don't know.
Well, what I'm talking about is how they took the 3D models from the intro and pretty much put them together on the main menu. I don't know how I feel about it, but it was okay.
It's not as spectacular as something that it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll have to check on the season.
Fanboys two. Warner Brother wow us.
Yes, exactly. Yes, you need to start living up to Marvel's standards, Warner Brothers. Especially with films.
I say nothing and I bite my tongue.
Alright. So I guess we are going to go to the other special feature that I grabbed, and we will be back with the outro.
When you call a show Justice League, you automatically think, okay, you're going to see Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman, and then the other ones as well. And this is going to be your only time to see these characters, you know, for the next 20 years or so in an animated cartoon, so you better get them right. So they need to kind of be their iconic, you know, versions. We ended up going back and coming up with an all-new Batman design. It's very faithful to the comics. For the sake of it, we kind of toyed with his design a little bit, gave him a little bit longer ears. They flare out to the sides a little bit more rather than being swept back. Gave him back his highlight on his black, you know, leather parts. Put little tiny heels on the bottoms of his boots, which he'd never had before in our animated version. That, if anything, that was probably a subliminal nod to Batman Beyond, who had heels on the bottoms of his boots.
We chose wisely when we offered you the ring. Thank you, John Stewart.
John Stewart was the one Green Lantern in the comic book continuity who never ever wore a mask, because most of the Green Lanterns wore a little domino mask. So he was the first Green Lantern to say, no, forget it, I'm not wearing a mask. You know, I'm not ashamed to be in a Green Lantern, I'm not ashamed to be in John Stewart. So we thought that was a real important part of the John Stewart version of Green Lantern. But just purely for visual sake, we thought we needed to give him some kind of visual gimmick for his close-ups. So we came up with the idea that he's been a Green Lantern for so long that the energy of the Green Lantern has kind of infused his entire being, so that it's even in his bloodstream and it glows out of his eyes, and it certainly makes an interesting visual. James Tucker took a pass over the old Superman design, and he felt that the old design was fine, but he thought that Superman could be a little bit more rugged, a little bit more grown-up looking. So we gave him, you know, strong cheekbones and little tiny dashes under his eyes, which are supposed to give him a little bit more of a comic book squinty look. Makes him look a little bit older than he did in the Superman the Animated Series. One of the very first comics I had possession of when I was a kid was a Hawkman issue, and it had Hawkgirl in it. And as much as I liked Hawkman, I just really fell in love with Hawkgirl. I thought she had like one of the coolest helmet shapes I'd ever seen in a comic. It was that real good mix of kind of tomboyish but feminine, and she was actually very simple to design. I mean, I basically just took her right out of the comics and didn't hardly change a thing on her. Flash was kind of a no-brainer designing. We knew pretty much right off the bat that we pretty much needed to stick to the comic version of his character. And it's a great costume, you know, red and yellow, you can't beat it. The one note we did get from DC Comics is that they had, in recent years, they'd tried to go a little bit darker with his character and with his design to try to make him look a little bit more fresh and more modern. We adapted that by giving him kind of a velour kind of look to his costume, so that he's always rim-lit. He's always, you know, the main body of his costume is a dark shadowed character, and he's got a little bit of the brighter red on the outside of his costume to kind of keep him a little bit more dynamic looking, so that he's not just a real big, you know, tomato. Martian Manhunter is a character that, you know, it's all in how you draw it. I mean, I actually think the design looks fine. I think he looks great. He's had various, you know, collar shapes on top of his cape. He's pretty much, you know, just the comic book character, just adapted slightly for animation. Most of the female characters we've designed for the various animated shows have been very petite, but Wonder Woman is a very strong and powerful character, so we needed to kind of beef her up a little bit, but not go into that bodybuilder mode, which they sometimes do in the comics. We tried to infuse her with a little bit more power just in the visual than some of the other characters. She's taller, she has longer legs, smaller head. We tried to keep her feminine, but very, very strong.
Let's go home.
Drawing is not easy, you know. Sometimes it may look easy because we've been at it for so long, but every single character is a design challenge.
You know, and something I forgot to mention our actual discussion there was when I went back and did a watch through, I got up to my laziness kicked in as soon as The Enemy Below two-parter started, and I stopped watching the season one. But one of my two notes was, it seems that Superman and Hot Girl get teamed up a lot. First in Secret Origins, then in Blackest Night, and then in the Savage Time.
They're kind of like the air hit squad for the team, aren't they?
Well, technically, the air hit squad would be Superman, Hot Girl, Jean, GL, and pretty much everybody except Flash and Batman.
Even Batman's got his Batplane.
Well, but he doesn't have natural flying ability. That's
true.
And then, surprisingly, later on in Secret Origins, after Batman says he doesn't trust him or you know, whatever, John and Batman work very well together, because the whole thing of John shielding him to plant the bomb on the Imperium's thing or whatever.
Yep.
Wow, that doesn't sound right. The Imperium's thing. Oh, good lord.
Wait, the Imperiums, or was it? Are you thinking of
no the Imperiums as plural, like it's Michael's DVD.
Oh,
so the Imperiums thing, the Imperium being that melty, superficial alien thing that stuck a tentacle up John's nose and put it through his brain. That is just such a horrid, horrid image. Oh boy.
Ugh. Kind of makes me think of the first Mummy movie with the beetles crawling around in the guy's skin. Yeah.
Thank God I've only seen.
So don't freak out when you got. Just don't freak out when a bug's crawling across you in the middle of the night.
Yeah. No, we're not going there. Oh boy. You know, I'm trying to think. There are subtle hints in this season of Batman and Wonder Woman, and they're so very subtle. You have to kind of watch.
You're looking for it.
And they kind of start with GL and Hot Girl, but not really. I don't think it really like shows itself until later on in season two, which we will be getting to, obviously.
I don't know, it got a lot more rampant at the end of season one. It was pretty much out there.
Yeah, well, the whole World War II story, kind of, they were trying to kick it up a notch with that, I think. And of course, everybody knows that Superman was a wimp.
Yes. Super like, wimp.
One blast.
Actually, there's something else I would like to say, but I don't say things like
super
that.
Super what? Super, does it start with an F?
No.
Okay. but it's actually funny when we get to, what is the episode in season two where they, which one is it? Where they go to, A Better World. of a Better World two-parter, I will point something out very interesting that relates to season one when we get there. We have anything else we want to say about season one?
It only gets better from here.
Yes, very much so. We are going to go to the best lines of season one that I put together, and then we will come back with the outro.
Good evening. This is Snapper Car reporting.
There's more to this than meets the eye.
Tag, you're it!
Don't even think about it.
Where's he going?
Flash, take the controls. But does anyone ask if I know how?
Who's the rookie in the TL?
No!
Wait! There's nothing more we can do for him.
You don't mean he's...
gone.
Hera, help us.
No!
Batman?
It can't be.
I mentally shielded him so he couldn't be detected.
Hawkgirl? What's she doing here?
If the ring wasn't lit, you must have quit.
What? Like a bunch of super friends? More like a Justice League. Do you have any idea how corny that sounds?
I'm not really a people person. But when you need help, and you will.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed my clip-gathering skills. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Lupus, have you finished your homework yet?
Maybe.
Of listening to the other five episodes of the show?
No.
Don't!
In my defense, I just finally got iTunes working again.
Alright, so... okay, so thank you for joining us here on the Secret Origins podcast. There are several ways to get into contact with us or leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com. You can join our forums, predaconempire.com/nexus. You can leave the show feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Secret Origins. Mine is TFG. And Mike, what is your Twitter?
CAMINITISTYLE.
Uh-huh. Become a fan of become a fan on Facebook. Search Geekcast Radio Network. You can call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name, 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Secret Origins podcast. I wish you'll join us next time when we will be starting Season 2 with the first three stories, those being Twilight, Tabula Rasa, and Only a Dream. For now, I am TFG on Mike with
Lupus Cowboy.
Until next time.